Ladies and gentlemen, we now have a Prime Minister who has a significant condition. Some would call it a disabling condition. Theresa May has type 1 diabetes, our new PM this last week and a half. It was talked about in Prime Minister's questions, in fact, this week. Take a listen.
As a type 1 diabetic and as a father and an uncle to children with type 1 diabetes, on behalf of 500,000 people, 30,000 of them children in this country, can I thank the Prime Minister for the example she has shown?
There are many youngsters out there, from tiny tots to teenagers, living with type 1 diabetes, and I think it's important that we give the message to them that their future is not limited. They can do whatever they want.
There we go. Diabetes spoken very openly and interestingly in Prime Minister's questions. This is Inside Out. I'm Damon Rose. With me across the table today is Emma Tracy.
Hello.
And on the line we have Leonie Watson.
Hello.
Leonie, hello. Thanks for joining us. Leonie is an accessibility engineer for an agency called TPG in the US that concerns itself with accessibility. And you are the communications director.
That's right.
But today we're talking about the fact that you have diabetes, and what we want to do is drill down into the lifestyle of it. And the reason we're talking to you is because you wrote us a really very interesting article at the end of last year, which got loads and loads of hits, about how you became, you're visually impaired, you're blind as a result of diabetes. Mm-hmm. As well. We'll perhaps come on to talk about that a little bit later. But the lifestyle of it all, what Theresa May have to do and go through and think about on a daily basis is where we are today. And we're going to give this a good amount of time, everybody. Last week it was Pokemon Go we were talking about. This week it's diabetes. This is what you want. Now, tell us about diabetes, first of all. What is it?
So type 1 diabetes is where an organ in your body called the pancreas stops producing insulin. And insulin is the hormone that when you eat something, breaks down that food into the different parts that your body can use as energy. So it mostly breaks down carbohydrates and sugars, so your body can use those things. And if you're a type 1 diabetic, then your pancreas stops working. It stops producing the insulin. So you have to inject it when you eat something. So you manage that kind of breaking down of the food so your body can use all the energy and bits and pieces by injections. And the way you figure out whether you've got that right or not is by doing regular little finger prick blood tests. Just get a little bit of blood on the end of your finger, dab it onto the end of a stick. These days, we all use electronic meters for reading these things, and it'll come out and give you a reading. And based on that information, you have to keep your blood sugar levels within sort of certain range, between 4 and 8 units, by the way we measure it in the UK.
Okay, so you have to take insulin to break down the sugar in your bloodstream in order to turn it into energy, or you will get what you'll get. So we hear these words hypo, or so you might have too high sugar in your bloodstream or too low. What does that mean, and what does it do to you?
So when you go hypo with an O on the end, that's when your blood sugar levels drop too low. And that tends to be something that happens sort of fairly quickly. For me, I notice it starting to happen because my muscles start to feel a bit wobbly. If anyone's ever, you know, run a really long distance and you get that kind of wobbly feeling in your legs, it's a little bit like that. I stop being able to speak quite as coherently as usual, so it's a little bit like being drunk when you start to slur a little bit and have trouble putting sentences together. So those are the sort of symptoms I look out for, and they're slightly different for everybody. And that means you've just got to eat something. Your body has got too much insulin in it, and you need to eat something.
So it's looking for something to break down, and you don't have enough sugar in your blood to break down, so you need sugar in your blood.
Absolutely.
And that then gets turned into energy, which stops all this wobbling and all that malarkey.
Absolutely.
And how does it feel? Is it an unpleasant feeling? Is it really unpleasant? How bad is it? How bad can it get?
In its extreme conclusion, you can pass out. You know, if your body gets to the point where it really is just, you know, burning through its reserves, you cease being able to function at all. But that's the sort of extreme conclusion. When it gets sort of very bad, while you're still conscious enough to do sort of something about it, you know, you get very sweaty. Literally sort of pouring off sweat kind of a thing. There have been times where I've been so wobbly that I haven't been able to go and get some, you know, glucose or sugar myself to do something about it. And my husband's had to help out, or, you know, a friend. So when it's sort of happening mildly and your first early warning signs, it's fine. It's not a great thing, but it's no big deal. But, you know, if you don't do something about it reasonably quickly, it can quite rapidly get a lot more serious. And then it's very unpleasant.
So that's hypo, and then the hyper. Tell me a bit about that.
So hyper with ER on the end is the reverse. That's when you've got too much sugar in your blood. So you've eaten food, but you haven't taken the right amount of insulin to deal with it, to break it down. And what your body does then is it just keeps all this sugar in your blood. And that has all sorts of nasty consequences. If your blood sugars get very, very high, you can feel pretty poorly. Pretty quickly. So if that happens to me, I get very thirsty, get dehydrated, I get a headache, I feel slightly nauseous, a little bit sick. The real problem when your blood sugars are too high is actually not so much what happens in the short term, but if your blood sugars are left too high for too long, and by too long I'm talking over, you know, weeks, months, you know, in some cases even over years, it can actually start to have a really damaging effect on other parts of your body, which is how I came to lose my sight. Your eyes, your kidneys in particular, are both pretty susceptible to long-term high blood sugar levels.
But if they're high in the short term and you do something about it, is that kind of considered now to be okay-ish? So if you ate like a big tub of Ben and Jerry's, other ice creams are available. Or something like that.
Right. I mean, it happens to us all. You know, everybody miscalculates, or we just had an extra helping of pudding, or, you know, you forgot to do, you know, an injection. It happens. We're all human. And, you know, by regularly checking your blood, if you discover that your blood sugar levels are out of the range, they're higher than they need to be, then you can just take a corrective dose of your insulin to restore them back to the normal levels. And, you know, you want to try and avoid doing that for sure. But, you know, in the real world, if it happens, deal with it. Move on.
Yeah. And but can you get drunk?
Can you or should you?
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone should really, should they? You know, whatever. But, you know, would you worry? Would it be something that you just wouldn't do for your general health? Or is it something that you just say, oh, well, you know, I'll just take some more insulin afterwards? Is that something that one can do and get away with?
You need to be particularly careful if you're diabetic and you're drinking. Oddly, for two opposing reasons. The first reason is that a lot of alcohol is very sweet. Beer is very sweet. Obviously, a lot of sort of liqueurs and particularly Alcopops are, you know, horrible examples of, you know, too much sugar in a drink. So on the one hand, you've got to be very, very careful because there is a lot of sugar often where you don't think there ought to be in alcohol. Conversely, the other problem is that actually alcohol itself can lower your blood sugar levels. So it's really actually quite difficult to manage drinking and being diabetic.
So some alcohol can lower your blood sugar levels. Some adds to your blood sugar.
The actual drink does both, has the potential to do both.
Right? Alcohol as a thing will lower your blood sugar. So if you drink something like vodka with no, you know, it doesn't really have any sugar in it as a drink, the alcohol will have a lowering effect on your blood sugar. But because most of the alcoholic things we drink have a whole bunch of sugar in them, if you're going to go and drink, eat at the same time, so you know, you've got that kind of cushioning effect of food in your body, so whatever is happening isn't happening kind of in extreme measures, if that makes sense. If I'm going to go out and drink, and I know there's, you know, it's a party, there's going to be, you know, quite a bit of drinking or something, I will often tend to make sure that my blood sugars are a little bit higher than I might ordinarily try and, you know, have them be. Before I go out, just to sort of protect against any, you know, lowering of my blood sugar levels. I don't like sweet things anyway, just from a taste point of view, so I don't tend to drink any of the alcoholic drinks that are horribly sweet.
We should just interject here and say that we are talking quite lightheartedly about alcohol and diabetes, but if you do want to drink, everybody's condition affects them in different ways, so do take advice.
Now, it seems to me that I hear about diabetes, I hear about the way it has to be managed, and you have to do blood tests, you have to take insulin. It seems highly organised.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking there about having more blood sugar in your bloodstream. How can you possibly gauge that? You've had diabetes for a number of years now, haven't you?
So
how many years is that, and how do you gauge it? How have you learned? What have you learned?
I've had diabetes since I was a little girl, so 30-odd years now. So I've grown up with it, I suppose. The other thing I really, you know, I should add is that if I were a medical profession, I would
professional, I would be sitting here saying, you know, don't drink, don't do these things at all, you know, or just have the occasional glass of wine. But I'm a diabetic trying to live in the real world, so, you know, trying to find strategies for actually living a reasonably enjoyable, normal life, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, just trial and error. I've got it pretty badly wrong on some occasions. Sometimes I've got it right. And, you know, like learning anything else in life, you start to understand the rules, how they apply to you in particular. You know, obviously with a medical condition like this, it's different for everyone. You know, I can sit here and say that, you know, my blood sugar levels should be between 4 and 8. That's the, you know, desirable range. But if I'm going to go out drinking, I'll maybe let them just rise up a little bit to, say, 10 or 12. And that, for me, gives me just a little bit of a comfortable buffer on the odd occasion to go out and party. Might be completely different for someone else.
Sounds very complicated.
Even more complicated when the rules from on high change a bit, or certainly the way they're put to you have changed, the ways they're put to you have changed over the years. Yeah. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, over the long time I've been diabetic, they've changed enormously. So when I was a little girl and first diagnosed, the way they taught you to manage your diabetes was very rigid. So I can remember the doctor saying to me, you know, you're 8 years old, therefore we think you should do, you know, this much activity in a day as an average eight-year-old. Therefore, you're going to require this much food, and they measure it in units of 10 grams of carbohydrate, and therefore you need to take this much insulin.
So you had a rigid timetable and a diet, did you?
Very much so, yes. You know, so they would really encourage you to eat, you know, very similar times every day, you know, to keep what you ate within this kind of, you know, predefined amount of carbohydrate for different meals, so that the insulin that you took, your dose, you know, always kind of was right for the food that you were eating. It was incredibly rigid. You know, a lot of those things are still good practice. It's good to keep a regular timetable for eating. But, you know, I can remember as a kid going into like a birthday party, you know, burger joint or something like that, and, you know, all my friends having milkshakes and burgers and chips. And because I could only eat a certain amount of food, understanding I could only have, you know, a third of a hamburger and half a box of chips or something. And, you know, no kid wants to do that the best of times, let alone when you're out with all your friends. And that rigidity, certainly in my case, and I believe a lot of other diabetics, you know, caused a sort of rebellious kind of attitude where we started pushing the boundaries to see what would or wouldn't happen. Now things are a lot more practical. What they do is you work with your diabetes care team to look at factors like your age, your weight, your general activity levels, typical diet and lifestyle. And what they'll do is they'll work out per those 10 grams of carbohydrate how much insulin you need to give yourself. So if you sit down and have a salad that's only maybe got 20 grams of carbohydrate in for lunch, then you give yourself a dose appropriate to that. If you want to sit down and eat, you know, full three-course meal with pudding, coffee, biscuits, the whole nine yards, you know, you can again just work out how much carbohydrate you're going to have in that meal and adjust your dose accordingly.
So it's a formula, mathematical formula you're doing.
Right, yeah. So, yes, you have to be able to be sort of reasonably good at a little bit of mental arithmetic, but as a management strategy, it's a hell of a lot more practical because, you know, you can sit there and think, yeah, you know what, sod it, this time I'm going to have that sticky toffee pudding and I know I shouldn't, but it's my birthday. But this time now you can actually moderate your insulin dose so it's more able to deal with the kind of extra sugar intake.
So the more practical, personable way of managing it, do you think that has helped people have less complications? You were telling me before that there are quite a lot of blind diabetics of a certain age or whatever.
Yeah, I was told that once, and a lot of people sort of my age, I understand, because we sort of fall between the generations that were perhaps a little bit better doing what they were told and the generation who were given this more practical kind of diabetes management strategy. You know, apparently there is a lot of people around my age who kind of got caught in the middle of those things that pushed back on the rigidity and ended up with quite serious complications. I don't know. I don't have any
no figures
course,
or anything.
I would really hope now that with sort of more practical strategies like this, you know, kids aren't finding themselves in awkward social situations.
Yeah, because I remember a guy at school when I was a kid. He used to have his lunch at different times than us,
right? Mm-hmm.
And his breaks at different times. Mm-hmm. And luckily, he was an incredibly sociable person, and was able to kind of, you know, ride the wave or whatever, but it just seemed very unfair, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're sensitive to that as kids. I mean, even as adults, that's not a comfortable situation to be put in. But when you're a child, it feels particularly, gloomy, I think, when you're being called out somewhere. You're not part of the crowd. You're not doing what your friends are doing in the way they're doing it. That's really important when you're young.
Tell me about the paraphernalia, about what you have to carry round and what that means and what you have to do. You know, do you pop off to the loo to sort yourself out? What happens? What's the paraphernalia and what do you have to do with it?
Yeah, I want to know what Teresa carries around with her in her bag.
Most diabetics will carry around a blood glucose meter, just a little electronic device about the size, I guess, of a pack of cards, maybe a little smaller these days. And mine is in a little case that comes with the little device I use to prick the end of my finger to get the drop of blood, and a small tub of the sticks that actually go into the meter that you dab the blood onto the end to get your reading from. So diabetics tend to carry around something like that. I guess, the case and all, that's I guess about the size of a wallet or a purse, maybe a little bigger. And also in terms of injections, most diabetics these days use injection pens. So they're like fat ink pens, but instead of an ink cartridge, you've got a cartridge of the insulin that you take. Instead of the nib on the end of the pen, you've just got a tiny little needle.
Oh, that's how it works. So you're not measuring out insulin into...
Not anymore. When I was first diabetic, I used to have to literally, do what you see in all the films, draw it out of a bottle with a hypodermic needle, a syringe, and cap it to get the bubbles out and all that,
Now, I've got a friend who, I regularly go out for, a few drinks, something to eat. And, I don't know, about half an hour into the evening, an hour maybe, what he does is, hang on a minute, Damon, I'm just going to stick myself, he says. And he rolls up his shirt a little bit and jabs something in his stomach. So that's his pen, is it? Isn't it? That's what he's doing.
Yep.
And is that something, I've always been, obviously I can't see, but I've always been a tiny bit surprised. Is that an embarrassing thing to do that in public? Would you do that in public? Would Teresa do it in front of Angela Merkel underneath the negotiation table?
I can't speak to anyone else, but I suppose because I've grown up with it, it's just something I tend to do. What I tend to do, actually, if I'm out, is do my injection in my stomach, because I find I can get my pen out of my bag and just, almost with my hands in my lap under the kind of level of a table if you're in a restaurant, just quite discreetly do that. And especially if, people are talking and all the rest of it, quite often it goes largely unnoticed or at least uncommented on.
Does that mean you don't wear dresses?
No, very, very rarely. But again, if I do that, if I've got a dress on, I'll just, under the table, just pull it up enough to be able to do an injection in my thigh.
So you can put your injection in anywhere, can you?
The recommended places are your thighs, your upper arms and stomach. So it's less important these days because the needles are very, very tiny. They're very, very fine and about 4 millimetres long in my case. But you just need somewhere where you can sort of pinch an inch of kind of body, if that makes sense. You don't want to be doing it anywhere that you don't have a lot of flesh and body fat covering you, because that's going to be uncomfortable. So they recommend those places because they're pretty good for just, grabbing a bit of yourself and sticking a needle into.
And I know you dislike this line of questioning, Leonie, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's difficult. I mean, you're a blind woman. You specifically told us you hate this, actually, before we open up the microphones. You're a blind woman working in a man's world, and you have diabetes that you also have to manage, as well as all the other social stuff and whatever. Is life a bit more difficult for you? Yeah, it's a similar situation in some ways. I'm comparing you now to Theresa May, Leonie. She's it has traditionally been a man's world, politics. Thankfully, it's changing. It seems to be at the moment. But diabetes as well, does it sometimes get on top of you? Is it sometimes a little bit too much to manage and have to think about?
Yes. Yeah, it can be really difficult. I mean, in the way that, I'll have a bad day and a whole bunch of other quite rational, normal, logical things just seem like they're a bit too much to deal with. We all have bad days. Just mine happens to incorporate those things. My job, I travel a lot, so switching time zones can really play havoc with managing diabetes, and I suspect that's a challenge that Theresa May will have as well.
And how do you deal with that, switching time zones?
One thing I do is I choose to do more injections than I might otherwise need to do, so that there's less space, less time between each injection that I do. So that means that as I move through time zones, particularly I travel, you know, say to the west coast of America, where it's an 8-hour time difference between us and there, you know, losing sort of a third of a 24 hours is quite a jump. But because I only tend to have, you know, somewhere between 4 and 6 hours between injections, I can kind of minimise the pain of doing that. You know, there are other ways to deal with it. And I'm sure Theresa May will have excellent advice on how she might be able to accomplish that. It is more challenging because I can't see. The blood testing equipment available to blind diabetics is truly appalling in this country. We have, I think last time I checked, one blood glucose testing meter that will talk. Which, when you consider, you know, just how prevalent diabetic retinopathy is as a cause of blindness, I think it's like first or second cause of blindness in the UK, is an absolutely dreadful state of affairs that we just have one option for a talking blood glucose meter. And unfortunately, the one that we've got is horrible to use. Anyone out there who is, you know, blind will understand. This thing greets you, morning, tells you what day it is, what time it is. Goes through a whole spiel about telling you what you've got to do, put your blood in the thing and the strip in the end and blah, blah, blah. And then if you're blind, you don't often get quite enough blood on the end of the stick because you can't see how much blood there is in the drop on the end of your finger.
How do you get the blood? How do you do that?
Well, you just do it by sort of touch. You sort of just trial and error. You learn how to do it. But the worst thing about this is that if you don't put enough blood on the end, it shuts itself down. And you have to start all over again. You go through the spiel and it tells you what day it is and what time of the week it is and good morning and it's lovely that you're using this meter. Thank you so much. Could you please just put a strip? Drives me spare. And actually, completely by accident, I ended up buying one in America recently when I was over there and the one I'd got wasn't working. And this one's brilliant because you turn it on and it beeps and it just says, put some blood on the end of the strip. Thank you. And that's it. No,
isn't it amazing that those few less words actually do genuinely make quite a difference to your life?
Absolutely.
You know, because you know, my microwave door, when it opens, it says door open. And I'm just like, why did you tell me that? Why did you say that? You know, I don't need you to tell me that.
You're right. It's just, you know, in the scheme of things, these things can unravel you. But there are some exciting new things, you know, in technology that are really starting to help diabetics. Somebody released a product last year that instead of needing to prick the end of your finger to test your blood, you wear a little sensor attached to your upper arm. It's about the size of a fat button, and each sensor lasts between a week or two, and it reads the glucose level of the fluid that you have between the cells in your body, and you just wave a scanner over this thing, and it'll give you a glucose reading. So you don't even need to roll your sleeve up. You can literally just wave it over your jacket and your jumper and your shirt or whatever. And this thing will tell you what your current glucose reading is, which is absolutely fantastic unless you're blind. And unfortunately, it's not accessible.
That's so frustrating.
But if you are sighted, it's unfortunately not available on the NHS and therefore quite expensive. But it's absolutely revolutionary in terms of, you know, how easy and how often you can check your blood sugar levels or your glucose levels.
And we don't know how Theresa. We should have checked before we came in to do this podcast. But we don't know how Theresa tests her blood. What I mean is the typical way is a similar way.
Yeah, I mean
that you do.
Yeah. So the sensor product I was just talking about, it's been available in the UK since last year. So it's not available on the NHS. Unless someone is able to fund it themselves.
Well, maybe that's the kind of thing that people with diabetes will be looking for Theresa May to change, as someone who perhaps particularly appreciates the situation.
It's possible. There was a campaign, a petition last year sometime, actually, to make this available on the NHS. It came down to cost, I believe. But it's one of those situations where the thing itself is expensive to run, but I think the improvements that it would give to diabetics in terms of their diabetes management would actually probably save the NHS an enormous amount of money farther down the line, because there'd be less likelihood of dealing with kind of more expensive complications. But, you know,
We should make that a task, actually. Emma,
yeah.
Later today, when we leave and we go back to the office, can you call up the Prime Minister's office and find out how she tests her blood, please?
And we'll, absolutely.
We will, listeners, we will tell you on the next podcast next week.
If we find out.
This is what they want, I told you. This has been Ouch Inside Ouch. And we'll be back again next Friday. Thanks so much, Leonie. It's been enlightening. You've been really open about it. Thank you. That's been great.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Emma. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email ouch@bbc.co.uk, tweet at @bbcouch, or find us on Facebook. We'll be back next Friday. Goodbye.
Goodbye.